issue. Insurance.
How long does it take?
An organizational meeting of the House Education Committee. Welcome members of the committee. Welcome members of the public. You will note the rules have been sent out to you, the proposed committee rules, and I'd like to give the administrator a chance to review any changes of the rules that might be noteworthy.
Good afternoon. The two key changes, which are minor, but from the last session, in my understanding, is previously referred to session day is now referred to as business day, and also the rules clarify that the speaker can designate the members of the subcommittee. My understanding is in the past was just the chair. My understanding is that's the only change in the rules from the rules used by committees last session. Anyone have any questions?
Which numbers were those changes identified in?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Comp, in the number 4, where it says the speaker may designate.
Okay, thank you.
And then in number 13, when it talks, it now says business day, whereas in the past, my understanding is it said session day.
Got it. Thank you. That helps a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Comp and I were talking yesterday. Will the subcommittees pass out, recommend it to this full committee? Will they do this full committee approve all bills from the subcommittees? Or
that will be a process that we've already set.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, regarding Rule 5, the chair should be an ex officio voting member of all subcommittees.
No.
So are you not intending to? I think you're the chair of my subcommittee as well, so how about that? Will you not be voting, or is this not apply?
In this case, it's a moot point, because I am the chair of the subcommittee on higher ed, and I'm a member of the committee for education innovation. So.
And this won't preclude you from voting, just because
not at
the
all
way it's written?
No. That's actually a very good question.
Yeah.
No. The answer is no. Thank you, Mr. That would be proper. That would be very proper. And please note that these rules, when we adopt these rules, we are adopting them for the two subcommittees as well. We will not have to readopt them for each subcommittee.
Yes, Chair Buckley, thank you. Just further clarifying, Representative Wisnett. So for the Innovation Education Committee, so then bills will be sent to us, and then then we send them back, and then if they have to go to Ways and Means or another committee, they'll have to. So we will always have at least two steps to get before we can get a bill to the floor.
Correct.
Thank you.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
If we should get a bill with no impact, fiscal impact, and it comes out of committee, then it's incumbent upon, if it comes out of the higher ed committee, then it's incumbent upon me to understand that bill. Will we be voting yes on it, or will it just go on?
We will have a vote on the bill.
And, but we wouldn't duplicate or...
We will not, unless a special circumstance would arise, we will not have an additional public hearing on the bill.
So then it's incumbent upon each member of the committee to be familiar with what's happening in both the subcommittees.
This is correct. A little extra work for you. Keep you honest. Any other questions on the rules?
Mr. Chair.
Please go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up on Representative Dolan's question then, is it your anticipation then that bills that come from a subcommittee will actually have a carrier to this committee that would then explain the bill to the committee, and some of the discussion that occurred in the subcommittee around the issue and around the bill?
The committee administrators will, as always, prepare a summary of the bills, and we will designate whoever
will be the eventual carrier of the bill will also serve that purpose for the full committee.
Oh, okay.
You guys ask good questions, so we're off to a great start. Any other questions on the rules?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we adopt the House Committee on Education rules as presented.
Let's do it this way on the rules. All those in favor of adopting the rules, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? And the rules are passed. I'd like to open an informational meeting. Skipping over the introduction of committee members and staff. I'd actually like to spend a little bit of time before we have our presenters. I'd like to allow for the members of the committee to briefly introduce yourself. Most of you know each other already, but it'd be nice to get a little bit of background, particularly your view of education, your background in education, and perhaps without going into a long list, your kind of hope for this work this session. And Representative Dahl, as Vice Chair, why don't we start with you? Just introduce yourself and say yours.
Because, Mr. Chair, I don't have the outline here yet. That's right, you asked for that. I was kind of hoping I could catch your question as other people answered it, but I have 10 years teaching experience, 25 years as a superintendent. I served on the Ritchie Commission, which is 14 Western states. I was elected to the school board with the new school district in the Dalles. At one time, when I very, very first started to be a superintendent, it was a small school, 45 students, K to 12. And we had a message from the university system that said, would you please route this to the guidance counselor, and that was me. And then to the principal, and that was me. And then to the superintendent, and that was me. And if you delivered them by bus, that would have been me, too. I've been actively involved in education for 35 years, 36, 37 years with school board experience. I think it might be the single largest issue before this body. And for that reason, I am extremely pleased to be on this committee and to serve with you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Tom.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. My background is I became a teacher the first day my child was born. So that's been almost 40 years ago. I didn't think of it that way. But I believe one of our first roles is to be good parents and have good families. But my education background is I got my bachelor's degree in 1990 and taught for 3 to 4 years. Because it's only 3.5 years, and then I've been a school administrator for the last 12 years. Actually, gosh, I wasn't prepared for this either. the last 14 years, and the reason why I want to be on this committee is education is very, very dear to my heart. I grew up in poverty. I had no literacy skills until much later than a lot of my peers, and education is the only thing that has opened doors for me, and I want to continue that for Oregonians. And the other issue that I'm really interested in is that articulation, so we can get high school juniors and seniors getting college credit and moving into either a workforce apprenticeship or moving on to higher ed.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. McClellan, you still writing your notes there? Why don't you go ahead and...
my mother's a public school teacher, taught at Marshall High School. Representative Roeblin was both my principal and her boss for a great number of years. So I was raised by an educator. When I went to Oregon State, I was a financial aid-only recipient, and that's how I got through school, was financial aid loans and work study. So the Oregon Need Grant at that time and subsidized student loans were essentially the vehicle for me to be able to go to college. I got involved, it was right when Measure 5 passed as well, 1990, was my freshman year. So I got involved in student advocacy through a grassroots group at that time, dealing with kind of educating legislators about the effects of tuition increases on especially low-income rural Oregonians. I became student body president of Oregon State, Sun Bowl champions, College World Series champions, thank you very much, and served on the board of the Oregon Student Association.
Association at that time called the Oregon Student Lobby for two terms. Then when I graduated, started my own business, I was appointed to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission and served four terms as the chair on the commission for 6 years until last January when I left to run for the legislature. So my primary interest is the role it played in my own personal life and the kind of life I've been able to lead versus and my grandfather and father, who both had mills to work in, and that was no longer the case in my hometown, and I felt I needed an education to be able to do something. I just want to make sure everybody has the exact same chance that I have.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Representative Crumble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Jerry Crumlin, and House District 26 is my district, which is Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston, so I have a very broad area. My background, and I think will be helpful to this committee, or hope it will be helpful to this committee, is my background's in education and healthcare. I've been in and out of education for the past 30 plus years. I've taught at the middle school, high school, and college levels. I've also worked in private business, so I kind of have that side of me as well. And I am currently the high school social studies teacher for Oregon Connections Academy. I'm, however, on loan to the legislature for this committee. Anyway.
Do they have an appropriate substitute for you?
Yes. They have hired a long-term substitute for me for the school year, or for the rest of the, for however long we're in session, which will probably be for the rest of the school year. And that person will actually, Representative Dallin is very familiar with that person as well, and she will probably be in a good position for next year because we'll probably have to expand our social studies department because our high school is going to grow. And Oregon Connections Academy is a public charter school through the Siles School District. And I checked the numbers yesterday, and we had 1,504 students, and that's a K through 10 school. We will expand to K-11 next year. I look forward to working with you on this committee. There's a variety of education issues that I know that we need to address, and I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Do our best to address the Wilson and Roland.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Ari Roland from the Coos Bay area, District 9, from Coos Bay to Florence. This particular committee has been my passion in my life. I began teaching in Oregon in 1972 at Marshfield High School as a math teacher and retired 32 years later as the principal of the same school, which is a rare thing, people staying in one place. Had the opportunity from that experience to do a lot of things in education and feel very passionate about making sure that we have adequate and stable funding and that we continue to help make sure that what we do here results in students achieving at higher and higher levels and being successful citizens. And the fact is, we have been a model in our state in education for years, and it has been through these difficult times that some of that has gone away. I had the opportunity at our local community college to also do a little bit of math teaching early in my career and understand the importance of community college and higher ed as a child, and I think this is what is the formula for me. I'm one of those ADHD dyslexic people, and elementary school was not very enjoyable for me, but through constant support of family and good educators, I have been given the skills to be successful, and I believe that every child out there has that same need, and we have the responsibility to make sure it happens for the citizens of our state. I've had the distinct opportunity in the interim to work on the education committee, and that has been a really good thing, and to work with both Chalkboard and Oregon Business Council to look at the issues that will be coming, and I look forward to being able to share that information with people and the expertise they have. So I really am happy to be here, Chair, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt has just a question. So was that September 1972 you started at Marshfield?
That would have been it.
I was born there. Two blocks away.
There you go.
It was in Fleming. I'm sorry, you're way out of line. It was in Lisbon.
My son was born in 1976.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Gene Wisnett. I'm a state representative. from Sun River. And so why am I here? I have retired, my experience as a retired military colonel. I was a diplomat, a spy, and now I'm a politician. I've had the pleasure of serving the people of District 53 since 2003, and since that time I've been involved in education in this building. I served on the interim committee in 2003-2004. I served on the Ways and Means Education Committee subcommittee during the last session, and during the interim I served on the Education Committee and the Select Education Committee. And I look forward to this committee and the work. It's very important work, and I look forward to doing good things. I think the next one. Hey, they're number one in basketball. I'm a product of public school in North Carolina and a great public university, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who was nice at OSU, even when my wife went there.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cannon over there in the youth wing.
Yes. I'm Representative Cannon. I represent District 46 in Portland. I have a pretty recent experience in education, and not just because I graduated from an Oregon public high school a little over 12 years ago, not that long ago, but also because 3 weeks ago I was teaching in a middle school classroom, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, at a small private school in Tualatin, where I've been for going on 4 years. I come from a family of educators and think, like Representative Comp, that education really does begin in the home. Education is the single most important thing that we can do to ensure that people, all people, have opportunity in society, and I think it starts particularly at the young, the early age, in those youngest years, and look forward to being involved, not primarily with this full committee because of a conflict with the Energy and Environment Committee, but I will be serving on the Education Subcommittee on Education Innovation, so we'll be hopefully passing good legislation on to you folks here on the full committee. Thank you, Chair, for inviting me today to meet with you, and I look forward to our work together.
Delighted. Representative,
Do you have
a question about Representative Cannon?
Yes, Chair Buckley. I think Representative Cannon is extremely modest. Could you share us with your academic background?
Yes, I graduated from Westland High School in Westland, Oregon, and I went to Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, and after a year out of WashU, I was elected as a Rhodes Scholar to attend Oxford University in England, which I did for 3 years, three wonderful years full of learning and travel, studying philosophy, politics, and economics, and then also education systems around the world. We looked at China, we looked at Japan, we looked at Sub-Saharan Africa and European countries as well, so a great research degree there.
Very good. So we obviously have a wealth of experience and passion on this committee. It's wonderful to have each one of you on this committee. My background, I'm also a product of public education, and I would say the major reason that I'm here today, even in the legislature, is for the very simple reason that my three sons do not have and have not had the same opportunities that I had in public education, and it drove me into politics, and it drove me into the legislature. The schools I attended in elementary school, middle school, high school, had decent class sizes, had excellent teachers, had pretty much every program you'd want. It had full programs in the arts and music, which became my passion, full programs in the industrial arts, avenues for any student to pursue their passion with. When I was looking for information to talk about today, I came across a quote from William Butler Yeats, an Irish poet I thought might be appropriate to bring in here. But Yeats had to say that education is not filling in a bucket, but lighting a fire. And we've let the flame dim dangerously in our state in recent years. So I'm very grateful to have the chance to work with each one of you to do something about that this session. Part of the work experience I had after college had to do with moving into arts and education. I served as a consultant with the National Endowment for the Arts, and I'm a passionate believer in the power of the arts in education. I hope to cover that here as well.
as we work together. Last session, when there were folks from the community colleges coming around to lobby us, I'm sure each one of you that were here last session had the same experience where young people from your community came and talked to you about their experiences. There was a young woman from Medford who came and was doing the basic pitch. You know, she came and said, you know, here's the situation, here's the programs that have been cut back, and our conversation coming back and forth to the point where it got into kind of a personal conversation. She talked about her family, she talked about how hard she struggled to try to be able, just be able to attend community college and what her hopes were. And I told her a little bit about my kids and my hopes for them. And there was a kind of pause in the conversation, and she looked up and she said a statement that I'll never forget. She looked at me as if she just realized it. She said, every year I've been in school, there's been less. And if there's one goal I have for this committee, is that at the end of this session, that every student, every teacher, every parent, every staff member, every administrator, every Oregonian feels it in their bones that we've turned the corner, that we are building public education in the state again. We're never going to turn back, and that the future is actually going to be bright. So that's the goal that I have for this committee. I'd like to talk briefly about the setup of the subcommittees, why we've decided to go this direction with two specific subcommittees and the full committee as well. The reason for the subcommittee on innovation, at the bottom line, is because we have expertise and passion. We have people that with many years in education who have been part of the discussion, groups like Chalkboard, groups like the Oregon Business Council. We have people who have been not only following but participating in the development of new ideas of how to revitalize education in our state. And the speaker felt very strongly that we should give a path for that passion and give a forum for the new ideas. And I'm very pleased that Representative Kopp agreed to chair that committee. That committee will focus on a strong focus on early childhood education, because that is where we really do need to put some of our innovation in and some growth in. It will also focus on K-12 proposals, such as the mentorship proposals, a variety of proposals that have come forth to actually strengthen K-12. The reason for having a subcommittee on higher ed is that, quite frankly, we've let community colleges and higher ed wither in our state. And it was the speaker's belief that we needed to bring great and intense focus to the needs of higher ed and the potential for higher ed and the path forward for higher ed. And so we will use that subcommittee to discuss issues, to bring great focus both on community colleges and on higher ed. And I look forward to the work with the members on that committee as well. I'm sorry, my administrator just passed me a note too. I neglected to mention we do have two members who are not present today. Representative Greenlick, who is still recovering from his knee surgery and will be with us with any luck next week. And Representative Lim, who is, as all the members heard on the House floor today, in Washington, D.C., and cannot be with us today. At this point, I would like to make sure that we have a chance to meet our staff for this committee. I met our administrator here. He's a new administrator. You have a new chair, so we're looking forward to being trained by all of you. But I received a phone call concerning our administrator several weeks back when the assignments were being made, and he's a young man with a resume that belies his years, and that he should be over on the youth wing, too. sitting next to Representative Cannon, maybe. There's some long resumes, but Derek, would you like to introduce yourself? Just give a little bit of your background to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm a Oregonian who was raised and went to public schools in Tigard, and I've went to college and graduate school on the East Coast, and worked for the last 13 years in the Foreign Service of the State Department, and recently returned back to Oregon because my family wanted to settle back down here. And I'm very excited to be working on this committee, and I look forward to helping the chair, members of the committees and the subcommittees, as well as members of the public, on issues regarding the committee. I'll be the committee administrator both for the full committee as well as the education higher ed subcommittee and sharing with Rick Perkovian the committee administrator duties for the subcommittee on education innovation. And myself and my teammate Andy Woodrum Tom will look forward to helping all of you as we do the work of the committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dave. Andy, thank you for being here. We look forward to working with you. Appreciate your help. Before we get to our informational part of our meeting, I'm sure you former principals did this as well, but defining the parameters of the work is important to do. So I just would like to let folks know we do hope to start as close to on time as possible, this committee, and we will end prior to 3 p.m. Because many of us have 3 p.m. committees. So time is a factor with our work. On Fridays, we'll be meeting in Hearing Room F. Just as a reminder, if you come into this room and we're not here, don't panic. Just walk over to Hearing Room F. The Higher Ed Subcommittee meets 1 p.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays in Hearing Room D. The Education Innovation Subcommittee meets at 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays in Hearing Room D. For members of the audience, please turn off, not just silence, your cell phones and your PDAs. They interfere with the microphones and the taping system, so we do ask those to be turned off. A reminder to members that the microphones are very sensitive and they pick up whispers when you are making interesting comments. They might very well be overheard. With that, and without any further comment or question, unless there is any, before we move into our informational meeting, I will close the organizational meeting and open the informational meeting of the House Education Committee. And we are fortunate to have, as our guest today, a group from the Oregon Student Association. And if did you want to come out together, all three of you together? Or?
Yeah.
Very good. That would be great. If you'd be so kind as to, I've already mentioned it from the Oregon Student Association, but if you'd be so kind as to introduce yourself to the committee, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Buckley and members of the committee. Thank you for giving the Oregon Student Association an opportunity to talk with you today. My name is Megan Dyker, and I'm the board chair for the Oregon Student Association and a student at Oregon State University. Go Beavs.
My name is Kay Jackson. I'm the co-chair for the Oregon Students of Color Coalition at 10th Western Oregon University.
And I'm Melissa Unger, and I'm the executive director for the Oregon Student Association.
Okay. The Oregon Student Association represents over 100,000 students at Oregon's universities and community colleges. I'm very honored to be able to speak with you about our legislative agenda. At first, though, I would like to give you an overview of why and how we came to decide our agenda. For an entire year, we debated about what are the most important issues facing us as students, and we came together and chose a recipe for a stronger Oregon. Before we talk about the ingredients of our recipe, we would like to take a couple of minutes to give some background. In 1965, President Johnson signed the Higher Education Act, saying, "It means that a high school senior, anywhere in this great land of ours, can apply to any college or any university, in any of the 50 states and not be turned down because his family is poor." He continued to say, I want you to go back and say to your children and to your grandchildren, to those that come after you and follow you, tell them that we have made a promise to them, and tell them that we have opened the road and we have pulled the gates down and the way is open, and we expect them to travel it. When President Johnson signed the HEA, it provided a $1,000 Pell Grant to any student who qualified completely based on need. Today, 40 years later, the Pell Grant is $4,050, which is a 305% increase. While it seems like a large increase, it pales in comparison to tuition increases over the past 40 years. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, total tuition, fees, room, and board at a four-year university was $1,105 in 1965. Today, at an Oregon university, tuition, fees, room, and board is approximately $14,000, a 1,170% increase since 1965. We're at a crossroads in Oregon. We can continue on the track we are on and be 46th in the nation for funding post-secondary education, with the largest decrease in funding in the nation since 1991. Or we can do what other states are doing and prioritize post-secondary education to ensure the future strength of our state. By the year 2010, 87% of new jobs in Oregon will require a college degree. And to meet this demand, we must begin to reinvest and prioritize post-secondary education. My friend Johnny Ozemkowski of Portland State University was lobbying in the Capitol just here on Wednesday, and he told a story to legislators that I think clearly illustrates why students are frustrated and looking for solutions. He could not be here today, so I want to take this chance to tell his story. Johnny's a student from Ashland who qualifies for some aid but is about $500 short of qualifying for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. He has to work to pay for school and has a tough time making ends meet. Tuition is so high that he can't afford his textbooks. He and 9 other friends went into my textbooks together because his financial aid and paycheck was not enough for tuition and books. While this story illustrates the lengths students go to have to pay for tuition, I think the most upsetting part of this story is that when he went to class on Tuesday, he was forced to sit on the floor. Johnny, just like myself and 90,000 other students in Oregon universities, is paying $5,000 to $6,000 for tuition fees to get an education. And when he went to class the other day, there were not enough chairs for everyone that signed up. So he sat in the corner on the floor for 2 hours. Johnny will be heavily in debt for an education that he sat on the floor for. This is frustrating. But the piece that makes me the most upset is that I know if I was just 5 years older, I would have paid $3,000 to $4,000 for an education, and I would have been provided a chair to sit in. Plain and simple, Oregon over the past 5 years has balanced the state budget on the backs of students. Legislators looked at students as a revenue source and disproportionately cut universities and community colleges compared to other state programs because they believed that students would make up the difference. While tuition has skyrocketed, universities and community colleges have still been forced to make cuts, such as increasing class sizes, cutting student services, forgoing filling faculty and staff positions, and cutting courses and departments to balance their budgets. Literally, we are paying more and getting less. For the students that are in school and going $20,000 in debt, this is maddening. Knowing that we, college-educated citizens, will be the backbone of the state's economy and that the state has done little to ensure that our money was well spent. But at the same time, I have to thank my lucky stars because I'm here. One of the most disturbing trends that has happened over the last 5 years is that enrollment has dropped. At a time when a college degree means more for the state and for the individual than ever before, for the first time in over a decade, resident enrollment actually decreased 1.2% at universities. While overall enrollment was steady because of out-of-state students, Oregon's universities enrolled fewer Oregonians in 2006 than in 2005. At community colleges, enrollment has been plummeting for the past 3 years because of tuition increases and program cuts. Community college enrollment dropped during a recession when many people have been looking at them as a place for training and job development. At a time when a college degree is more important than ever for a state to attract businesses and build a strong tax base, we are educating fewer Oregonians. While all students have felt the impact of the state's disinvestments, students of color, low-income students, and rural students are especially hurt by the cuts and increasing tuition. Students from family incomes below $25,000 are 40% less likely to attend college than students with family income above $75,000. While white students are twice as likely to enroll in students than Latinos and African Americans. And while 31% of 18 to 24-year-olds overall attend college in Oregon, only 14% of rural Oregonians 18 to 24 are attending college. For the students that do go to college, they're more likely to drop out because of tuition increases and cuts in student services. So while the state's disinvestment has hurt everyone, it's the students that President Johnson once promised an open gate for that are the most impacted. While we believe that this open gate has been blocked in Oregon, we're hoping that our recipe for a stronger Oregon will begin the process of removing some of these roadblocks.
It is all of these problems that brought us to choose our recipe for a stronger Oregon. To come up with our priorities for this session, we surveyed over 6,000 students statewide and did extensive research on issues most pertinent to students' lives. And finally, students chose 4 issues to address the issues of access, retention, and quality for post-secondary education in Oregon, which we hope will create a real change for Oregonians working to attain a college degree. The first ingredient in the recipe for a stronger Oregon is to further invest in the Oregon Opportunity Grant to address the issues of affordability and access. The Oregon Opportunity Grant, our state's only need-based aid program, attempts to eliminate the growing gap between who is able to attend college. While the legislature made historic investments in the program last session, we are far from President Johnson's goal of opening the doors of universities and colleges to all citizens. The Oregon Opportunity Grant, despite the investment made in 2005, serves only the neediest of students with a small, flat grant that is arbitrarily based on 11% of the cost of education. We are failing to offer adequate grant aid at a time when Oregonians with the lowest 20% of incomes are having to pay 80% of their income to send a child to state university. For today's students, working their way through college is a myth. Oregon University and college students would have to work 48 and 39 hours respectively to pay for the cost of their education. Unable to work their way through, low-income and middle-income students are left with the options of borrowing to attend college or not attend at all. According to the Department of Education, Oregon students depend on loans to attend schools at higher rates than any other state in the country, leaving with an average of nearly $20,000 in debt for a four-year degree. For many, the total is much higher. I'm a perfect example of a student who needs the shared responsibility model. When I first started school at Western Oregon University, I received the opportunity grant, and while it afforded me access, it wasn't enough. I was forced to stop going to school and work full-time to make ends meet. I was able to re-enroll, but no longer was able to get the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So currently I have three jobs, working over 60 hours a week so that I can continue my education. I worked a graveyard shift last night, and after I leave this hearing room, I'll go to another job where I'll work from 4:30 to 12. This session, the legislator has the opportunity to close the affordability gap and ensure that I can get my degree. The governor's students, universities, community colleges, and other interested parties have worked together since last session to create the shared responsibility model, a new model for need-based aid in Oregon that would restore the opportunity grant to its original mission. For the first time, the state of Oregon would outline what is expected of all parties involved in the student's education, the student, his or her family, the federal and the government and state. Under the model, students would once again be able to work their way through school, and families would be able to plan for the future, as generations before us have done. Under the model, which would be facilitated by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, the student makes the initial investment in their education through reasonable work hours and borrowing, with families contributing what they're able. If students and families fulfill the requirements the state expects of them, the state will then step in, where the federal government does not, to fill the affordability gap. Instead of awarding arbitrary flat grants to all students, the shared responsibility model would award grants based on income, with more assistance going to our state's neediest students. Financial eligibility would be extended to middle-income families. Projections show that students from families with incomes from up to $60,000 per year would receive grants. Providing aid to the middle class is a necessary step. As tuition has increased, middle-class Oregonians have little to no relief. The shared responsibility model funding is sufficient to provide average grant amounts of $1,800 for approximately 42,000 students in 2008 and 2009. This greatly expands the population of students served by the initial numbers have indicated that a fully phased shared responsibility model would increase enrollment in the arts institutions by 3,775 students that would not have enrolled without additional aid. This model represents the kind of values that Oregonians can get behind, offering the opportunity to post-secondary education to anyone who is willing to work for it, and resulting in a stronger, better Oregon for the future. The governor's budget includes all necessary funding resources to implement this model by 2009.
Our second ingredient for a stronger Oregon is tuition and funding, an issue that was chosen to address the real situation that students are paying more and receiving less. We believe the state can't continue to ask students to pay for an education that the state won't invest in. States across the country are investing in post-secondary education, and Oregon needs to do the same. The return for our state is undeniable. Every 1,000 new Oregon citizens who graduate from college means nearly $62 million tax dollars for state-funded systems and programs such as public schools and public services. Not only do they contribute more in taxes, they attract businesses, they are healthier, more civically engaged, and less likely to rely on state services. The governor's recommended budget is a great first step in rebuilding our state's university system. Since 1991, Oregon has had the fifth largest tuition increase in the nation. The the governor's recommended budget would keep increases to no more than increases in median family income, ensuring that tuition increases do not outpace a family's ability to pay. The governor's budget also starts the process of reinvesting in universities by funding the student-faculty ratios, faculty salaries, rural universities, and enrollment growth. While we believe that the governor's recommended budget is a strong investment, we are interested in working on one issue dealing with interest on tuition. In the past, the interest from tuition has been rolled into the general fund, something that students have opposed. The governor has proposed giving the interest dollars to the university system, which we support, but he also reduced the general fund by $19 million because of the increase the universities will have in tuition dollars. While this doesn't impact the budget in dollars and cents, we believe that it does continue the trend of shifting the burden of funding for higher education to the student. It was less than 20 years ago that the student paid for 35% of the cost of education and the state paid for 65%. Just 7 years ago, it was close to 50-50. Today, students fund approximately 62%, while the state funds nearly 38%. Students will be asking that we keep the interest earnings on tuition and also keep the $19 million in general fund to begin to reverse this trend and make students and the state equal partners in funding higher education again. Another important aspect in rebuilding Oregon's higher education system is addressing a damaged community college system. Oregon's 17 community colleges are critical in training our citizens for family wage jobs and providing local businesses with a trained workforce. State disinvestment in our community colleges over the past decade has closed the door of access for many of those who need it the most, evident most in the drastic decline in enrollment. From the years 2003 to 2004, Oregon's community colleges enrolled 47,000 fewer students than in the previous year. Now is the time to reinvest and rebuild. OSA is asking the legislature to fund the community colleges with $46 million above the governor's recommended budget. With full funding, our colleges will be able to keep tuition increases as low as possible, offer professional and technical programs necessary for a trained workforce, and better serve adults and non-traditional students by expanding night and weekend classes. Fully funding the community college's budget will also allow increased distance education for those unable to get to campuses, improve access and services for disabled students, and increase enrollment.
Our third ingredient for a strong Oregon is expanding the Aspire program, which we believe is a solution to the problem of access and preparation. Aspire, which stands for Access to Student Assistance Programs in Reach of Everyone, is a unique volunteer-based program that helps Oregon high school students plan for their futures. At a time when Oregon's high schools are far behind the national average in providing counselors to their students, Aspire seeks to fill this void. One-on-one mentoring programs are what experts claim are most effective, and that is exactly what Aspire is. It matches mentors with students to walk them through the financial aid process and college application process. Aspire mentors have seminars for students and parents about how to apply for financial aid and scholarships. Parents of high school students, especially low-income and first-generation, and students of color, overestimate the cost of tuition by as much as three times. Without any information, families believe that a college education is out of reach. The Aspire program empowers families with options and information so that they can realize the dream of an education. Aspire, although never receiving state funding before, is currently in 86 of Oregon's 317 high schools because of grants through AmeriCorps and other foundations. It has been proven successful time after time. At Ashland High School, 1 year after the program was introduced, school officials reported a 12% jump in graduating seniors, indicating their plans to attend post-secondary education after graduation. For Aspire to expand, the state must make an investment. The governor's budget for the first time ever includes state funding to expand the Aspire program from 86 to 150 high schools in Oregon. While this is a great first step, OSA and OSAC is asking the legislature for an additional $1.7 million above the governor's recommended budget to fully fund this program, allowing it to expand into 285 high schools. This will guarantee that all Oregon high schools that are interested have the opportunity to offer this program to their students. Aspire works to make sure that all students, no matter their background or parents' education, have access to information about college. Our last primary ingredient for a stronger Oregon is to pass tuition equity. Tuition equity describes a bill that was introduced in 2003 that would allow in-state tuition for all students who attend Oregon High School for 3 years, graduate, and are accepted to an Oregon university, regardless of their immigration status. As Oregon grows and our demographics change, it is imperative that we focus on educating all students and guarantee that graduate and succeed in high school. It is not in the best interest of Oregon to turn away bright and motivated students that want to give back to our state by giving a college degree. 10 other states, including our neighbors to the north and south, have taken the step of passing similar legislation to ensure that they provide the opportunity of a college education to all of their best and brightest. Students that would qualify for in-state tuition under this bill have often attended Oregon schools for most of their lives. They have built friendships, worked hard for good grades, played sports, and been active members of the community, but they are forced to pay out-of-state tuition, which is 3 times higher than in-state tuition, because of something that is out of their control. Most of these students plan on staying in Oregon and are working towards their residency, but aren't able to enroll in our universities because of their family's documentation status. To ensure that we're meeting the demands of the state and allowing all students access to college that want it, we must pass tuition equity and do what's right for our state. In addition to our 4 legislative priorities, we're also looking at what the state can do to solve some of the problems that students are facing because of increasing cost of textbooks, the use of resource fees at our universities, and student debt, as well as child care and voting. In conclusion, we believe that we can make Oregon stronger by investing in our institutions and in our students. When President Johnson signed the Higher Education Act, a college education was not necessary for a family to make a living wage. In 1965, all wages were still increasing. Yet today, a college education is more important than ever for individuals, the state, and our community. We are investing less than ever before. Our goal is that in 2009, we can say that is no longer true. Thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Members, any questions or comments?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. I just want to say, Key, I'm really proud of you. Key is a graduate of Woodburn High School. She was a student that, weren't you a student body president?
Vice President.
Vice President. She sat in all the board meetings as a student representative. And you're still alive. That's really important.
Thank you, Representative Goff. Any other questions or comments?
Yes.
No.
Megan sat in my kitchen.
Did you?
I did.
It's Rocky.
That's true.
And you did switch? Yeah.
No. I did sit in your kitchen, yeah.
I'm glad you verified that. I lost the Rocky start.
Yeah.
Essentially about any of the topics?
About any of the topics, please?
Well, yeah, certainly do have some opinions. I'm not going to go into them in great detail, but I just think that folks really ought to take a good look and be proud of the both the Aspire program and the shared responsibility model. I was chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, as I mentioned, and was involved in developing both these programs. The shared responsibility model particularly is interesting because so many people, and when you're out going door to door, you hear about it, say, you know, we make just a little bit too much money to get financial aid. And what this really does is say, well, we're not going to do the kind of cliff where once you fall off, you're all the way off. We're going to use technology, and we're basically going to do kind of a financial aid packaging for every Oregonian the way an institution would, but doing it in advance and say, you know, you've got a whole lot of federal money. Maybe you don't need as much state money, where someone who makes more income on you than you do on paper looks like they would actually not need the state help. They actually need it worse because of the federal aid. And so it's a much smarter way to look at how to use resources, and it will increase drastically up the income scale who can get the grant. And there are families who are truly middle class who will be able to get it. We're now at, I mean, it's just very low income. And the Aspire program is, I mean, you know, have them in your districts, is just one of the best leveraging of volunteer resources that's going on in Oregon, where you'll have one privately funded AmeriCorps student, you know, through, or someone maybe from the Ford Foundation or Oregon Community Foundation, leveraging 50 or 60 volunteers coming in. And it just does not cost a whole lot of money, and you're getting retired educators and people who care about students to come in and give their time freely to make sure people can go to college. And it is such a great program, and it's been important for the foundations to see this day. You know, I've sat with the foundation presidents and saying, you know, we can't do this forever on our own. We need to see the state say, this program exists in statute, and this program has some state general fund, because we need to see that it's got a value to the state of Oregon, and not just those of us in the philanthropic community. So this is a very big day. It's very important that we convince our colleagues on the Education Ways and Means to fund the program, and that we pass the statute. So I think Representative Roman's going to be working on that.
Mm-hmm. I want to say the same thing. Having been a member of the board on Aspire a number of years ago, and having watched it work at our school in Coos Bay and other schools on the South Coast, the shared responsibility model is just this perfect match for Aspire. Because what happens when an Aspire volunteer sits down with that student the first time and they start evaluating what it is, in the past, that cliff that Representative Clem was talking about shows up for a lot of those people. And where they have this aspiration, the Aspire people work hard to help them find out how to get grants and loans and all those other things to fill in that gap. For some people, seeing those numbers is shocking for their families. They've never actually had those kind of loans expectations ever in the family's life. And so for the student, it turns off this light that was there. The shared responsibility model says, you know, if I work part-time and do these things, I have an opportunity to get the education that I want. And it gives those tools to those people, those Aspire volunteers, to show them the way. And I am really excited about the possibility. I look forward to as we go through the legislation that comes here. We introduced some Aspire legislation in the last two sessions, and I look forward for it this time moving through and becoming actually a part of OSAC as it would work, and another good institution that's continued to help our Oregon students find ways to get their education. So look forward to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask for some help with my homework since your great presentation, obviously your background, Melissa probably helped a lot of us. The interest earnings, so the governor is going to give us money but take it away. I didn't understand that. You can comment on that a little bit more. And you were asking for four. I'm sorry, can't get away from Ways and Means it's a little bit. The increased funding, $146 million more dollars. The governor's what was his recommended budget? And so what's the total amount you're asking for there? Thank you.
Chair Buckley and Representative Wisney, the $19 million on interest earnings is actually, I mean, in real, the budget is pretty much equal. What happened was that he changed $19 million that was general fund into other funds. Since the $19 million had been rolling up into the general fund, he just subtracted it so that the state didn't have an impact at all. And so, but what we're saying is that only further shifts the burden of funding post-secondary education from the state to the student, because it's only increasing the other fund appropriation, which is what the students are paying for, while decreasing the general fund appropriation. So while it doesn't have an impact to the state, but to the university system budget, we do believe that, one, universities need that money to be able to actually provide more education, make sure that there's not students sitting on the floor, and actually making sure that students have, you know, a decent faculty-to-student ratio, and that faculty are paid and compensated, and that, you know, the state's funding all of the enrollment, and so that $19 million is a critical investment. And then on the $46 million, the overall ask for community colleges is $529, and so the governor's budget provided $46 million less than $529, which I think is around $483, if I did my math right quickly in my head.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed one other one. What's the governor's recommended budget for tuition request increase?
It's actually, he did, Chair Buckley, Representative Wisniewski, he did fund it at the increase of the median family income. So we're supporting his
2%?
It's 3.4% right now is the proposed, is what it will approximately be.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to welcome some other leaders I see in the audience. Kevin and Mike, former student body president, student advocate. Joel, recent alumni as well. I don't know who other alumni, but at least two active and one, you know, recently graduated that Sun Bowl champion, National Award Series champion.
Welcome. Nice, very good to have you here.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair,
Okay.
Is Representative Klein going to be absolutely shameless in who he points out in the audience once? If that be the case, I'm a graduate of Lewis and Clark for my master's in University of Utah. If I can get some Utes to come into the audience, may I introduce them?
You would be welcome to introduce them.
You'd be encouraged.
Thanks to everybody.
Thank you. I would point out that world-class weather reporter on Channel 8 in Portland is a hoot also.
That's excellent to know.
Roll call.
Here's when Don wants a roll call vote on allowing members to. I'll keep that as the chair's prerogative. Thank you.
The only comments I would like to make is to echo what the Representative Roblin said. You've done outstanding work. The shared responsibility model is fantastic. It's what we need to do, the way we need to move forward. And I was invited to be a guest at the Phoenix High School, one of the AP classes, and had a great time doing question and answers about state government with a really fantastic group of students. And at the end of them, just very casually, I said, so, again, where are you guys going to school next year? And because most of them were seniors. And out of a group of about 28 students, four of them had plans to go to college in some AP class. And I was absolutely shocked. And I said, why aren't you going to? And to a person, they said, we can't afford it. And that's why Aspire is so important, is because they didn't even have the basic information of what was available to them. So all I can say is thank you so much for your work. Thank you for being here today to give this presentation. Best of luck as you move through this, and we look forward to seeing you in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you again for having us.
Thank you. Without any other need for comment from anyone, then we will close this informational meeting with a reminder that Representative Comp Subcommittee meets at 1 o'clock on Tuesday. Thank you very much. Okay.